It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here in Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and home of Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. Go to the Freedom Summit, first weekend in December. Got a lot of great speakers. It's all going on. We're going to be heavy promoting here in the next this next month as we're building up to the Freedom Summit. It's always a rip-roaring good time with a lot of great speakers. And it's when you have – I tell you what. When we had our first one, it was 3 weeks after 9/11. And this will be our ninth or tenth one. And when we had our first one, it was planned, of course, months before and everything. And then 9/11 hit. And we're like, wow, everybody was, you know, canceling flights. They were saying, I think I'm just going to stay home. I'm going to go visit family. So we had probably a third of our people cancel. And we go, should we cancel it? And we go, no. Yeah, we're willing to take a loss on it. And we about broke even. We maybe took a little bit of loss. But we go, we didn't do it to make money. We're doing it to what my partner Mark Victor and I had done is that we had wanted to see a lot of these great speakers, but oftentimes they were keynotes at this one event. You had to sit through a whole bunch of people that you really didn't want to listen to get to the one good guy or maybe two or something like that. And we go, you know, we could just invite all the people that we want to listen to, all the people we want to have dinner with, all the people we want to sit around and, you know, drink beer and talk around the fire. You know, let's do that. So we did, and it just turned into this thing, you know. So now the Freedom Summit, really big names. I mean, all the guys that knew what was coming. Well, guess what? It came. And now we're looking at, you know, we look back and we can see where this kind of stuff has been happening over and over and over. As you get older, you see it's recycled trauma that they put on individuals and even countries to the point that you're willing to believe or accept just about anything, or you're just so numbed by information that is so contradictory of even the same people giving you the same information, they'll contradict themselves a couple of months later to the point that you just don't believe anything. Well, maybe that's the goal. Well, there's a new film coming out, freemindfilms.com, that talks about Oklahoma City. There was a lot of us that were paying attention back then. We had a, you know, special window. You know, some here in Arizona, there was a gentleman that was a BATF agent that named Rick Shiro that turned. And we got firsthand a dose on that. We're like, whoa. So we knew going in from the beginning in the mid-90s that this was, you know, all make-believe. Well, now we have NIST, the National Institute for Standard of Technology, whatever it is. It's the national community, the United States government for, I guess, when you need something evaluated, a standard, so you send it to them. Well, a bunch of this 9/11 stuff they did. Architects and engineers just got one, their FOIA request, Freedom of Information request, and got a bunch of video from news services and individuals and so on that had been given to them thinking they were going to do right by it. Well, they didn't. Well, they won, and there's like almost 40 sections of it or parts of it, and they got just one, number 14 so far, and a bunch of others coming just from that one of almost 40 parts. We got enormous amounts of video where firemen are coming out of the building saying there's bombs going off in there. Multiple bombs, multiple detonations, and explosions. You see the doors of the elevator expand out and they open, you know, they open up and there's guys standing there on fire. So it's like, you know, this is and marble being blown off on the first floor and firemen getting hit with it and lacerations. I mean, they're going, man, we are under attack inside the building, something. So this, how do you address that? Well, it's coming. And now we have the opportunity with this new film going back and taking a look at Oklahoma City. Well, if you start looking at that, you start seeing a bunch of other things. You start to see how, you know, these private organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center and all these other groups kind of whip up, you know, Tim McVeigh and the militia and the right-wing extremists and everything. They're evil. Remember Janet Reno and the Clinton administration talking about, you know, those that believe in the second coming and are Christians and born again and whatever, they're cults and they should be taken down. Well, that didn't go over real big with a lot of people. But, you know, that was the attempt. Well, now it's happening again. Yes, it's the Tea Parties and the right wing, the militias and the Oath Keepers and all these are rising up. They're rising up against civil authority, and you should not complain and just do what you're told. Well, some people are researching. Some people are complaining. Some people are have enough information that they can share. Well, you know, we have people like that. Kay Beach from Oklahoma is on the line right now. Kay, you know, is there anything you wanted to add to that rant before we get into it?
I don't know what I could add to that, but I will say that we continue to research on the Oklahoma City bombing, and we want to document everything that is important so that future generations can use it as a jumping off point, further the research. You know, I don't know that anything will ever happen legally, but our kids and in America and the world deserve to know everything there is to know about it. I had the great opportunity to meet Jesse Trinidou here recently, and we've interviewed him and we talked about him last time. He is the man who is a lawyer in Salt Lake City whose brother was murdered at the Oklahoma City Federal Transfer Center. It was a case of probably mistaken identity. They thought that he, this is what we surmise, that they thought he was a member of the Midwest
Midwestern bank robber gang or something.
And he is just as wonderful of a person as I expected him to be. I think I described him, and I told him this when I met him, as a Viking. And he's not giving up. He's continuing on to try to find out. You know, he won a little over $1 million, I believe, in a civil settlement for the death of his brother. And if you're following, you know, if you're following the Oklahoma City bombing, you're probably following Jesse Trinidou, because we've got more information out of his lawsuits than anything else. So we do continue to research on that, and I continue to rack up the points on how many times Timothy McVeigh and the Tea Parties are mentioned in one sentence. In fact, Rachel Maddow, very disappointing, had a show not too long ago where she accused a congressman in, Idaho, of having prior knowledge, saying that he got a fax shortly before the bombing. And you could forgive her that mistake, but she had talked about that before, and when she talked about it before, she knew that that was not true. And she reported it differently before. So,
but when we come back, we'll get into it. We have more time. You know, I took up a lot of the time of the rant. I wanted to get that out because it's a continuation of the same thing by oftentimes the same people. And we're going to talk about what people are trying to control our minds and get them thinking a certain way. We'll talk about it when we come back. You stay right there.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Kay Beach, my guest from Oklahoma. You know what? What happened after Oklahoma City, the equivalent of the Patriot Act, was the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. You know, I remember this. It was, it's like you could be charged with the death penalty if you spray painted graffiti on a federal building. And it was if you did anything to deface a federal building, bomb it, spray paint it, whatever, you could face the death penalty. And they were all about, we're just going to get more prosecuted, more hardcore with our whatever, so that we just have more arrows in our quiver of screwing with the people. And that it had an enormous impact on habeas corpus. I remember us talking about this back then, but we didn't have the internet like we do now. We had email lists that we would, you know, communicate. A lot of those that cared, we'd get our information on this. But the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 96 was also, you know, introduced as part of the Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich's contract with America. Well, now we have, you know, promise with America. You know, the contract with America, on America, whatever your perspective is, started, what, 6 weeks before the midterm elections in 94? We got the promise with America 6 weeks before the midterm elections in 2010, 2 years after the Ross Perot run, 2 years after Ron Paul run for president. So this is, it's like it's a regurgitation of the same thing. This is why I want to talk about this issue now, because it's a continuation of the same thing with the same organizations, the same people on the other side. They know how to push the buttons. They got a compliant media helping them. But the only difference now is that we have the internet, which is, they don't like that none too much. And one way to get, you know, the information out is the movie that's coming out. A Noble Lie. That's the name of the movie, right?
That's right.
Tell me about that movie.
Well, this movie is an effort by some good friends of mine. You can listen to them on the Free Mind Report, which is on Rule of Law Radio, rulelawradio.com, on Wednesday night from 8 to 10. They're producing this movie, and, you know, like I said, basically they want to document and bring forth new information and put it in a coherent narrative so that we have that information for everyone.
You know, that's one thing that, you know, I remember the scene in the movie V for Vendetta, to where all this information is kind of, you know, the detective was getting all this information. And then V kind of concocted a meeting with him at one of the memorials and so on. And he goes, oh, you already have all the facts. What you need is a story. You know, you need a story to connect all the facts. Having all the facts doesn't tell you the story. And that's what this movie does. It provides a lot of these facts have been known, but you need the narrative. You need to understand how they connect.
Exactly so. And that is what this effort is about, is providing a narrative, bringing in all these disparate facts and the new facts and pulling it together, you know, in a storyline. And they're doing some excellent work. We're getting great interviews, new information. And like I said, got to meet Jesse Trinidad, who's in Oklahoma City, and a heartbreaking story, but a very inspirational man, Jesse Trinidad is.
You know, the one other movie I went and saw this summer, when it first came out, I was in California with some friends, and we were visiting there, and I said, you know, while I'm here for a few days, you know, I need to go see this one movie. I may just break out for a couple hours and go see it. And we're like, oh, no, what is it? We'll go see it, you know. And we went and saw the Pat Tillman story. And it was one thing, it was so frustrating and infuriating to see what this family had to go through just to get the truth, or even to have it, have somebody in authority even ask for the truth. And as they went through this, in the end, they finally got a congressional hearing and Rumsfeld and friends up there and lying and whatever. And, you know, it's pretty much the end of the movie. And, you know, we at least got them to, you know, lie before everybody, so everybody knew they're lying. And one of my friends that I was with, he goes, I found that movie inspirational. I was upset. And I go, really? Why? And he goes, well, look what that family did. They challenged them. They went all the way. They made them stand before everybody and lie. They, you know, that's what is inspirational about this story. And I'm going, yep, okay, well, you know, that is a source of inspiration, as A Noble Lie will be on the Oklahoma City bombing thing. When you have that issue comes up, a lot of people, they vaguely remember it. They kind of sort of get, but if you were in politics at the time, certainly in libertarian activist politics, you understood the ramifications of that event. Who benefited? How much? Why? What laws got passed? You could see the man, big giant digging into the heels of the police state, and it got built upon even more with the Patriot Act and the law, the wars and all the other stuff that happened after 9/11. And you can see the same people. And now we're starting, it's like we're being set up for something else to happen. I want you to start talking about how these private organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center and Anti-Defamation League, how they use their influence to get legislation passed and attention brought to these things, and they get to frame it however they want. What's your experience with them?
Well, and I've done a lot of looking into that, and I have been shocked. Now, lately, there's been a lot in the news about the connections between some of these so-called watchdog groups. And I'm a big civil libertarian, so I'm all for. I mean, you won't even catch me thumping the ACLU like a lot of my very conservative friends who probably have very good reason for it. But in this day and time, with the issues that are in front of all of us, they don't seem to be wasting their time on things that are aggravating to especially some of the social conservatives. And they have the money and the know-how to back these things up. I mean, the surveillance is just a huge problem. But what I have found with, I went back and looked at Waco. I really got to looking. And I would tell people right now that if you want to know the story on the watchdog groups, there's a gentleman, and I believe he's deceased now, unfortunately, Laird Wilcox. And you can find his work if you'll do a search on L-A-I-R-D, Laird Wilcox, and look for the watchdogs. You'll find a couple of reports he did. He's done a lot of stuff. He has a library of political materials that is, it's got to be the largest in the world on this sort of thing. All sorts of, extremes and the right, the left, everything. He started out on the left, but he seems like to me ended up somewhere pretty close to the middle. But he talks about, let me give you a for instance, something that I didn't know. Do you remember back in the middle 90s, the big issue about the Southern church burnings?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, my memory was that there were some haters burning some black churches. That's awful. Well, when I go back and look at this, I find out some of these watchdog organizations, and the ADL was instrumental, I believe, a offshoot from them really pushed this issue. They went in to prove that there was a bunch of haters burning black churches. Now, that's what everybody remembers, and that's the important part, but that is not what they found. That's not the truth. And there were at least three or four major changes made. For instance, now a church burning or church arson is a matter of federal involvement. But there are also some laws passed on this. I read many papers, discussing the problem and what we have to do about it. It never happened. In 96, or when they were looking at this, there were actually less church burnings than usual. And the only pattern, now there weren't, I'm not saying that there weren't haters burning black churches, but there was no pattern. There was no crisis. In fact, the only pattern that they found was a pattern of a fella that was a Satanist that is, has responsibility for possibly 50 churches being burned. That was a pattern. That was something new. The rest of it was random. It was randomly dispersed. There were black people burning black churches, and there were white people burning black churches, and vice versa. But there was no crisis, and there was no pattern that indicated an issue.
We'll go ahead and talk about it more, and we'll pick it up from there when we come back here and declare your independence. The use of these private investigatory agencies that have sanctioned themselves, I guess, and they got buddies in the government, because after Hoover got caught infiltrating a lot of the civil rights movement, the Congress said, nah, we don't want you doing that anymore. So they relied on private organizations to do it for them, and they're without control. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's break on through to the other side. How do we do that? Well, we ask some questions of the right people that maybe know some answers or at least getting us to be interested in the answers? Should we even ask some questions? When do they become too old to answer? I mean, I've been hearing that a lot in the last year. Oh, why, you know, don't bring up 9/11. It's not coming from the people that, you know. I mean, it's other people. They don't say, oh, you kook. Oh, you crazy. Oh, you're not. You're just a conspiracy. They're not saying that anymore. Yeah, enough time goes by and they go, are you still on that? Do we really have to dwell on that? Can we get past that? They don't say that you're wrong anymore. There's too much information coming out to where they're kind of, yeah, they're just trying to, it doesn't matter anymore. Something like that doesn't matter anymore. Well, same thing happened with Oklahoma City. You know, and you have the same people involved. There's this you know, rising up of people that are asking questions, demanding answers, and then they need to co-opt them. They need to put them in a box. They need to have controlled opposition. And they call it the Tea Party. It's just one example. One of the founders of it, which is Kirk Denninger, you know, claims that, you know, I told everybody to send tea bags to Washington, D.C., therefore I'm the guy. And they're getting him street cred on cable news saying he's the guy. Well, whatever. He's coming out saying, yeah, the Tea Party Express and Palin and all these guys and Gingrich, you know, a pooey. You know, I spit upon thee. So So what is really out there? They want you to be confused. They don't want you to just independently ask your own question, independently go look for your own answer, and then add it to, you know, the collective consciousness. Just say, hey, man, this is what I figured out. Well, you know, this has been going on with the Oklahoma City bombing thing for a long time, and I'll tell you what connects them. It's a lot of the same people that were screaming that this was a result of extremists. Because think about it. What did we have? Oklahoma City, domestic terrorism, 9/11, foreign terrorism. Well, that just about covered everything, didn't it? You got two sets of laws for it. First one was the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. Okay? Then you have the Patriot Act after 9/11. So I can see this is going, and I wanted to talk about these organizations that are the ones that amp up the rhetoric for this, that push this kind of legislation, that want this more centralized government control, this economic and social engineering of us and our thoughts. So Kay Beach is with me. She's an activist that I met in Valley Forge when we were back in Pennsylvania doing a forum there, Liberty Forum. And Tom DeWeese had this event going on. And we're there doing a radio show and meeting a lot of people. And I made friends with Kay. And she's written on Freedom's Phoenix. A lot of the information that she shares, she's been able to share with the rest of us. Thank you. And I just wanted to talk to her now about, you know, I feel the same rhetoric coming from the same people. Do you?
Definitely. Definitely. In fact, the fact that I am studying all of these things right now makes it very clear to me. While we were on break, I went and pulled up my notes. I didn't know I would really be talking on this, but I'm fixing to do my interview on the information that I've been researching. And, you know, I went back to Waco and really looked at all of that. And there was an organization called CAN. It was a Cult Awareness Network. And, you know, the BATF actually referred back to ADL and CAN as an excuse for how they acted. But they said things like, officials should use whatever means necessary to arrest Koresh, including lethal force. These people were deprogrammers. They would take people out of cults and deprogram them and return them to their families. And, you know, so there's an element of, you know, them making money off of this. And they were referred to as experts by the press, by the FBI, by the BATF. And while other experts, true, you know, philosophers and professors of religion and all these things, were turned away. But you look at, you see this element in Waco, that they were feeding this information, saying to use lethal force on him and all of this. And then you go back to Oklahoma City, and I'm looking at my notes right here. And, you know, I was talking about Rachel Maddow earlier. She did come back and correct herself, but, of course, that doesn't matter. And, you know, I think you caught a glimpse of the writing that I wrote up, and I knew that you would because it had something to do with mass medication or neuro vaccines or whatever. one thing I found really interesting about that, and I know we'll go to it in a minute, was this element of something called mimetic engineering. And mimetic engineering basically, it's a controversial idea that the propagation and quality of information should be monitored and managed. And when you talk about some of the same people, you go to Newt Gingrich with the documents that I'm looking at now that have to do with policy that is being created and implemented now. Newt Gingrich, I've got quotes by him talking about using the media to control people's, you know what a meme is, right? It's like, Richard Dawkins coined the term, and it's sort of like a gene, only it's an idea or just a bit of culture that people will see and copy.
It's a cultural idea. It's a, symbols, practices, heritage, tradition, a meme. I get it.
Yeah, right. And so what was really surprising about some of the new policy documents that I was looking at is that plays a prominent role. I've also got a lot of documents on PSYOPs and things like that, kind of disturbing. So these people were taken as they were just given the title of expert. They put this information, and you see this happen now. For instance, the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Aspen Institute recently, when we were looking at the story with the fella up in New Hampshire that had the baby taken away, that these people are on an advisory committee for Homeland Security. Well, what a lot of people may have missed is they've been in an advisory position with Homeland Security. I've got an article dating back to 2007 with Cheritoff welcoming them in. And this is what I'm looking at with Oklahoma City, this intertwining. And after Oklahoma City, they really created a spot for themselves, these non-governmental organizations. They're writing policy. And the thing that I have to say, I'm very supportive of civil rights groups, but groups like the ADL or the Southern Poverty Law Center are not civil rights groups. They are political groups masquerading as civil rights groups. They have a political agenda. It's obvious. And it's a left versus right. Everywhere I go, everything I see comes down to an ideological war that we are in the crux of. And no matter whether you're looking at the Mayan calendar or if you're looking at, there's a book called The Fourth Turning, which looks at historical patterns. We are coming up on, and Newt Gingrich coined this term, the age of transformation. And not only are we looking at, the fact that we are coming up on an age of transformation. I mean, we're due for it historically. It's being predicted all over the place. And I think there's some basis in that. Our government is trying to hasten this transformation. And they use tools to do it. And that is particularly what I'm looking at in the recent documents, in mimetic engineering. Well, I would say that these groups, these so-called civil liberties groups, these watchdog organizations, are just another tool, because what doesn't make sense is when you look at all of the faulty information that's provided, all of the lies that they've been caught in, and even the, indictments, like with the ADL back in 93, with all of the files on not just right organizations, but left, anybody that had displeased them, sharing that information with the police illegally. You would think that the government would start backing off of utilizing these groups, but no, they keep pulling them in closer and closer. That cannot be an accident.
Of course not. They need them. They need some kind of sanction, or the experts of, or the people that sit in on the other side of the desk at the chair on the CNN, Fox News, MSNBC seat. I get it. I mean, I remember. You're talking about, it was a cult awareness network, right? Is that what you were talking about?
Cult awareness, yes, that's exactly right.
That kind of came together, I think it was after the Jonestown murders. They did do it. That's where you get the term drink the Kool-Aid, okay?
Exactly so. That's when they started.
So they went to Guyana, and he, had his own problems or whatever, but they went down there. Some people were concerned about their loved ones. A congressman went down there. They knew they were going to, face some whatever. They're paranoid anyway. So they knew these guys getting back on the plane, they're going to go back and tell everybody, how screwed up they are down there. So they went and killed everybody. Then they went back, shot them getting onto the plane, go back and mix up their cyanide Kool-Aid, and everybody drink the Kool-Aid, and they're all dead. All right, well, so here comes Can. Cult Awareness Network, and they started doing whatever. What was interesting is in the mid-90s, they were going through, they got attacked by, because they were going after the Church of Scientology, too. Well, that cost them a lot of money. They're going into bankruptcy. Church of Scientology bought them. You know, they just, now the Church of Scientology is the head of the Cult Awareness Network. And I think they called it something else now, but, you know, this, but so they weren't useful to go in and help them with the government. And they were the Cult Awareness Network. So now they had somebody else. Lots of other people. And, you know, when we come back, we'll get into some of these other organizations and how they're being used and the history of this. If you just live long enough and you pay attention, you find out all kinds of interesting stuff you didn't know.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence, the show must go on. From Phoenix, Arizona, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, home of Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. Go check that out. See all the great speakers we got first weekend in December. Very nice here in Phoenix. Oh, and they have all the Christmas lights up then. It's very nice at the resort. Now, you know, a noble lie, the trailer, I want to play just a minute here. This is Mr. Lawson. He's was in the building at the time, and this is the kind of films that clips that are coming out on 9/11. The people that were inside, firemen, policemen, everybody, you know, the workers there, the janitors, the engineers in the basement, they're saying, "Man, there's people were being blown up down there before it even collapsed." Well, you know, we went through this before.
On the eighth floor. Felt the building start shaking, lights went out, debris started falling on my desk, something hit me in the back of the head and knocked me out before the truck bomb went off. What that tells you is that there were other explosive devices in the building.
You know, this was stuff that we knew back then. You know, it's the same thing over and over and over and over. And, you know, if you had to put... we have Kay Beach on, an activist from Oklahoma that's been studying this for a long time. If you had to have a common thread that ran through these cover-ups and all these different kinds of things and the legislation that was passed and the people clamoring for the legislation and demonizing individuals and pointing at certain people that, you know, may or may not have anything to do with it, what's the common thread between all of these?
Well, let me think. I mean, the common thread that occurs to me first is that one thing I've noticed with these events is that the government was clamoring in some way, shape, or fashion for new powers. And Oklahoma City is a great example, so is Waco, for that matter. They were clamoring for new powers, and there's plenty of instances where they have stated, you know, we need something, we need a horse to ride, you know. And so they were clamoring for new powers. The event came, and they used that horse to ride to get those powers. Now, whether that means they just are opportunist or they, you know, the big question with Oklahoma City, and Jesse Trinity said this, and I said, boy, do I ever get what you're saying. I really never wanted to know as much about the Oklahoma City bombing as I did. The fellow that you just played the clip from is VZ Lawton, and he is a good friend of mine, and it seems like for whatever reason, many people that were directly involved in the Oklahoma City bombing have been put right in my path, and I have found all of them eminently lovable, and VZ Lawton is one of those people. Charles Key is another, and even Janny Coverdale, whose grandsons were killed in the daycare center. So that's one thing I've noticed. And one of the things I'm researching on Oklahoma City is what laws subsequently came out of Oklahoma City. We had an interesting situation in the White House. The Republicans were actually opposing the wiretapping laws and the habeas corpus, which, you know, you see the effects of what they did with habeas corpus after 9/11 with all of the Middle Eastern men that were rounded up that could not contact a lawyer, that could not contact their families, that were held for weeks, days, weeks, months without any representation. That came from Oklahoma City. That Oklahoma City was the genesis of limiting habeas corpus. And so every one of these events, and there's always going to be tragedies, there's always going to be criminals. You know, Oklahoma City, if they had have gotten what they wanted with the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, if they had gotten what they wanted, any violent crime could have been considered an act of terrorism. But what do you see with 9/11? They picked up where they left off. And instead of the Republicans opposing these things, they were championing it. And, you know, thankfully we had that opposition in the White House, because there it would have, the laws coming out of Oklahoma City would have been much worse. And they were on the same page after 9/11. And that's why we're seeing the results that we're seeing now.
Well, it's the same people. I mean, you know, you go and you look at Newt Gingrich and Dick Armey and Bill Boehner and blah, 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 same names. I mean, I don't even need to look. But it's the same people back then. They're like being resurrected, reincarnated again to do the same thing. I mean, heck, Tom DeLay was part of it. And I'm wondering what they got planned for us now. And if you had to ask they, them, those, I mean, who are they? I wouldn't think that, you know, even Karl Rove is coming here in a week and a half or so. And these guys, there's no shame, man. You know, they'll come up and say, yep, you know, the evil empire is alive and well, and we're part of it, and the Republicans are going to have been elected. They get a majority, or they at least make big gains. And you'll see Karl Rove coming back to be at the front and center of this thing. Mr. Brain's going to work his way back into the public discourse. And I got to ask, what is it that they want? I mean, is it total hegemony? I mean, they want dominion? What is it they want?
Speaking of the same people, Newt Gingrich is a great example. I found a document, and I'm a document nerd, and I found a government document called the Vision Working Group Report and Scenarios. And that's where you got, I was so inspired by it that I actually created a graphic, and I'm not a graphics artist by any means, of chemtrails, a globe, and the World Health Organization superimposed. And the reason I did that was, this group was doing future scenarios. One of those scenarios, scenario number 7, my very favorite one, which is called A Brave New World, talks about aerosolized neurovaccinations to control people's behavior. So I found this document, and I realized, okay, this is a companion document to a policy document. That document is called Forging a New Shield. It's a over 800-page policy document that was presented on November 26 in 2008 to Congress, President Bush, and then President-elect Obama.
And what's this document called?
This one's called Forging a New Shield, and it's 800 pages long. To boil it down to a sentence, it basically proposes to rewrite the 1947 National Security Act to totally revamp our security system. The words consolidation and streamlining and centralization all come up again and again. But the idea is that we need to strengthen important elements of national power institutionally, financially, to create a capability to integrate and apply all of the elements of national power to problems and challenges. That is a quote by Robert Gates, who's quoted in the document. But Congress established and funded this group called the Project for National Security Reform to undertake one of the most comprehensive studies of U.S. national security system in our history. And so if you remember back to the 1947 Security Act, well, that created the DOD, if I'm not mistaken. And then we had, in 1986, we had the Goldwater-Nichols Department of Defense Reorganization Act. That was in 86. And that was the most recent and it was just sweeping changes to the Department of Defense. One of the things we're seeing now is this merging of civilian and military. Well, they're working a transformation, and that Vision Working Group document that had the – you have to read it. It had 9 different scenarios. What they were doing was they were gaming the policy in forging a new shield. So, in other words, they did pre and post scenarios to see how would the policy affect this scenario. Well, the scenarios in and of themselves are telling. You know, and one of the things that stood out to me was this neurobehavioral vaccination. They had a project, it was called Operation Mercy. And in this futuristic scenario, Google screwed that up for them, let the cat out of the bag. And they were really mad because they had the WHO and the UN on board, and we had eradicated, this is somewhere in the, I think, 2030, that we had eradicated troublemakers like you, Ernie, from our population through these neurovaccinations and also through genetic engineering. We had eliminated them. We just didn't have a problem. We had happy sparkle world. Well, they got to worrying about other countries, and they weren't happy sparkle world. What if they hurt us? And so they decided that. Yeah, let me give you a quote from this vision document that really sums it up. All truly new ideas destroy what they replace. The process of scanning the horizon for the next great news must be continuous and never bound to conceptions of permanent truth. See, we get so advanced by 2030, I guess, that we have a whole new set of ethics. There is no permanent truth. And, you know, what you're looking at there is what utilitarianism, which is very much opposed. This is what I talked about when I talked about the Panopticon last time. The most good for the most people, that's the highest order of the day. This is contrary to what most Americans believe their system is based on, which is individual rights granted to us by our Creator. That is the concept that I keep coming back to, and they are working very diligently on trying to get rid of that meme. Now, these documents blew my mind, and I had to go back and research, and I've done a lot of historical research. In fact, I haven't even really read but scanned the 800-page policy document. I'm sure there's some gems in there. But back in 2001, Newt Gingrich was a keynote speaker, and he coined the phrase the age of transition. I hear the music in it.
You know, this is something. You get more information on this, let me know. I'm posting it right now. The project.
I'll send you a report.
Thank you. Project on National Security Reform, Forging a New Shield, November 08 Executive Summary. I'm putting it up on Freedom's Phoenix right now. Thank you, Kay Beach. Yep, she's doing all the document research for us, making sure we don't get caught unawares, even though it might be a couple years later we find out about it, but she's helping. Kay, thank you very much. Get all this stuff up on Freedom's Phoenix, will you please? We definitely need to hear about this, because I'm putting it up right now. Stay tuned for Ivan Elin from the Independent Institute. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.